You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
It's been a hell of a week, my friend.
Has it been a hell of a week?
It has been a hell of a, H-E-L-L-U-V-A, a hell of a week. I have just completed like 11 days straight of shooting, and it's not insignificant because, you know, we try to manage our calendar to where it's very, you know, everything's portioned and put into a little cubby hole, so our schedule makes a lot of sense. And what happened is a couple weeks ago, I was looking at the calendar, and this week and next week, there was no shoots. It was like nothing. It's like, wow, we're dead. What's going on? And then I checked the calendar like 2 days later, and I have like 9 shoots both weeks, including stuff over the weekends, right, which I don't normally work.
So. Oh, so just like that, you filled up, boom.
Yeah, which, I mean, it was like an avalanche. It was crazy. But, you know, the business is like that, ain't it, though?
Yeah, it is. It is. If you do weddings, then you're always booking 6 months out. You look at your calendar 6 months out, and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough bookings. But then if you start doing other stuff, suddenly that happens to me, where I had a week just recently where I didn't have much going on, and then suddenly I ended up, oh, it was a last-minute job for school pictures, and then Kevin Newsom called me and asked me to help him shoot an event, and then the next thing you know, it became my busiest week of the month.
Yeah, it's I just wanted to say to the listeners, because I know we missed a week, which we sometimes do.
We did. Yes, we just glossed right over the fact that we weren't here last week.
Yeah, we weren't here last week, and then because just work through the weekend. Last weekend, I had a job Sunday and Monday, and Sunday is normally when we record. And me and my team shot 320 headshots at a convention, and it was awesome. And what was significant about this is that it was for the Association of Administrative Professionals, basically the people who run these large offices all over the country. And it's about 2,000 people attend this event, and 1,972 of them are women. And these are, like, it's a boss lady convention.
All right.
But it is no dudes. Like,
that's funny because I did the same thing. I shot a women's conference for women's financial advisors.
Yeah.
And it was nothing but women.
I'm serious. This is in Orlando at the Gaylord Palms, which is one of our big, it's a huge, huge venue. And I was in the convention and just watching all of these like educated, well-dressed, talented, you know, hardworking, successful women walking around. And I was like, texting my single friends. I'd be like, okay, guys, get a damn suit on and get down to the bar at the Gaylord Palms because there are 1,900 women here and no men. Like, you cannot fail. So that was the instinct I had because I want to help a brother out. But then I realized I don't have that many single friends anymore.
Come on down to the bar, Ray Don.
Yeah.
Ray Don. Come on down to the bar and bother the women who don't want to have anything to do with you.
Yeah, they're like, hey, finally, girls' weekend. Oh,
yes.
No. I mean,
Ray
but
Don.
Anyway, so then
I wonder how many people get the reference Ray Don. I know you don't get the reference Ray Don.
I don't. I would have certainly.
Somewhere out there, someone gets the reference to Ray Don. One of the greatest episodes of Designing Women was all the women were at a bar and a guy kept coming over to bother them. Why don't you little ladies have a drink with us? And you're just, oh, don't be a sourpuss. And finally, Julia launches into a just wonderful monologue against Ray Don. And, you know, she says his name like that. Well, Ray Don, you may find it hard to believe that women could possibly spend any time without being in your presence. But it isn't. And she just goes into this beautiful feminist, you know, this idea that men have that, well, they can't possibly be having a good time without us.
I personally believe
it's true in my case. But for most people.
Because you're a girls guy.
Yes. And for most people, cannot have a good time if they're not in my presence. But, you know, for the average guy,
I like to amend
guy,
that and say no one can have a good time without Boo Ray Perry.
That's
not
right,
really.
Exactly. So in my case, it doesn't work. But
you
for
can
any other
near
guy,
it.
That argument works. That
you can have a shadow of a good time.
Leave the women alone.
You can have the husk of a good time.
Yes.
You can have the shell of a good time.
A shell of a good time.
A shell of a good time.
Yes.
It's a shell of a good time. Unless you're hanging out with Boo Ray Perry, and then it's a real good time.
Hey, I also want to know about the cop convention. Didn't you work the cop convention?
Well, as of today, I have one of my photographers on my team is still shooting it. And there's some stuff that I can and can't divulge, it's not super special, but this is a law enforcement convention and it's a very big one. So anybody who's anywhere adjacent to law enforcement, this is the biggest gathering of law enforcement professionals in the world. So it's not like the convention's a secret, but what goes on inside the convention, like, the security's insane. Like, and as you imagine that it might be, I think that the scheduled for the president is supposed to be there at some point giving a speech. Like, so there's, you imagine the advanced teams for the Secret Service are there.
Security, sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I couldn't even get in the convention center, a building that normally I could walk into the convention center in a hot dog suit with an AK-47 and no one would stop me. I mean, it's the convention center's just, there's too many entrances, there's too much going on.
Right.
But this is locked down, like you couldn't get near the place. I had to go with me and Robin, who was my assistant, who was working with me. Robin worked with me, and we could not get past the front door. We couldn't get inside the building. And then we had to go through two security checkpoints where they searched all of our bags just to get to the registration desk where we were meeting our client.
Wow.
And with a client at... See, you have to go... This is the catch-22. You have to go to the exhibitor registration to get your badge, but you need a badge to get to the exhibitor registration desk. So, like, that's the kind of security we're talking about here.
That's
so,
a tough one.
Yeah. So, we had... There's a way to go in with a badge where you get to kind of go straight ahead, where you've already been vetted, and then there's another entrance you walk around, basically 7 football fields worth of length around the convention center, up 16 escalators, up and down another elevator, through two very angry security checkpoints where they look through all your stuff.
Angry?
Yeah, oh, man, I've never
intimidating,
seen...
Intimidating, I think.
And we love working for the Orange County Convention Center, and their staff is top-notch, their facilities are incredible, but I've never seen their security personnel so on edge before.
Wow.
And so this was a big deal. So we were hired by Uber, yeah, the company with the cars,
right?
To photograph. They have a whole division that just deals with law enforcement. So we're doing photographs. That's who we were working for. And so, anyway, it was
there's
a really...
an Uber for cops?
Well, it's not for cops because, you know, Uber is a big entity and they're in most of the big cities all around the world. And so if there's an issue where Uber has to liaise for whatever reason with law enforcement, they have a whole team for that. And that's who and they are a big sponsor of this conference. And so we were there working for them, had an absolute blast. What a great bunch of people. The security was insane, as you might imagine it would be. The thing that really struck me about the law enforcement conference, and I have a lot of love and respect for law enforcement. I have some good friends that are in law enforcement. I have friends and neighbors and family members who are in law enforcement and who are first responders. No disrespect. You guys do a job that most people couldn't handle. However, can you guys all just agree that you have the same haircut?
Yes. They have one haircut.
There's like one.
The high flat top.
I mean, this law enforcement convention is probably 75% men anyway, but let me give it. The uniform is like the high and tight.
Right, the high and tight. That's like the standard. If you're a cop, you've got the high and tight.
Nobody's allowed to have a beard. Most police departments.
Usually it's against the rules, I'm guessing.
Yeah, right. They prohibit facial hair with the exception of the porn stash. So you can have a porn stash.
Yeah, porn
so you've got... You've got a bunch of dudes like clean shaven, high and tight haircuts, and then it's a polo, like an athletic material polo shirt with something embroidered on it, tucked into a pair of pleated khakis.
Yep, that's it. That's it. That's the look right there.
I've never been in a room before where so many people were dressed differently but the same, and how you would not believe with the security. Everybody still had a gun. Like, it was like open carry, Wild West. There was seriously one guy with a big, like, chrome shotgun just standing there.
Just standing there with this giant
Predator
gun
over
his shoulder?
I don't think I've ever been in a more secure location. Seriously, you imagine how dumb of a criminal you'd have to be to go into that situation.
It'd be like something out of a bad comedy movie where, you know, and then we ran through the front doors of the cop convention.
Like, we fell back. Like, they were trying to dig under to get up into the bank vault, but they ended up digging up into the middle of the exhibit show floor at a cop convention.
Yes. Police Academy 16.
Sounds like a Woody Allen film.
There's your plot right there.
Yeah, I think we just wrote a movie.
I had something happen to me this week. I worked with Kevin, and then I came home because he couldn't download my RAW files. I shoot with Canon. He shoots with Nikon. His Nikon uses I always get the names of the cards wrong. The ones are CF.
Yeah, well, the big ones are CF. Then there's SD. Then there's XQD cards, which are the Sony specific.
Okay, so the big ones are CF, and the small ones are SD.
Yeah.
Okay. So he uses Nikon, which uses two SD cards, and I use Canon, which uses SD and CF. And by the way, why CF? I always assumed the bigger cards were better somehow.
In my opinion, in my experience, for you photographers out there, and nobody flip out, I like a good SD card, but the problem is unless you buy specific ones, they can be very flimsy, and they damage very, very... Now, I almost exclusively use SD cards now because my camera will take them, the 5D Mark IV, but so does my iMac and my MacBook Pro both have SD card slots so that I don't have to use a card reader anymore. That's why I lean on those most of the time because they're more standard. However,
SD cards are more standard? Because I thought CF cards were more standard.
Well, in professional photography, most of the cameras for years and years and years, CF cards were like the main deal. And right. They're bigger, they're more robust. And so they're harder to break. They're a lot more durable. I've put CF cards through the dryer before, and they've been fine. Like they are a better card because I feel they're a little harder to lose because they're bigger and they're a little tougher. And so for most stuff, I give up that robustness for a card that is. I don't have to have a card reader with me. Like when I travel and stuff, I just pop it in. And so I tend to lean on the SD cards more. However, I've had to
The SD cards are the small ones. Okay.
Yes. So I use those a little bit more. You got it? You with me? S for small. SD means small, dude. All right. Now you know.
Oh, there you go. Small, dude. That'll work for me. That you laugh, but that'll be perfect. I'll remember
and
forever
so,
now.
I was buying the Lexar because they're always on sale and they're good cards, except for they use these on the back where the little actual metal memory tabs are. I don't know what you'd call those, but there are little plastic rib fingers that are go in between them on the Lexar and on many, many other cards, and they snap off so easy. And once those break, then the card can be unreadable. And so I had to start buying exclusively the SanDisk cards that they don't use those plastic ribs, and so they're a little more robust. But I have a 128 gigabyte CF card.
Which ones don't have the plastic ribbing?
The SanDisk makes the pro cards do not have the little tiny plastic ribs on the back that can break real easy.
And yet they're still a pleasure to use.
They're still pleasurable to use. Yeah, even without the ribs, I find, you know.
Because I've heard otherwise.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on who you ask. I find maybe female photographers prefer the cards with the ribs.
You had to go there.
Did I take it across the line?
You should have stayed way clear of that.
Should
have stayed way clear. It was way too obvious.
All right.
Way too obvious.
Have we met?
Now we have to like put a disclaimer.
I'm not exactly the king of tact. I want, you know, like I'm not known for my tact.
Okay. So back to my story is that Kevin, he couldn't get my card to download. He had a reader, but it wouldn't download my card. So I said, no problem. I'll go home and I'll download them all and I'll put them onto a thumb drive and I'll bring them to you. So at first I was going to upload them. So I'm trying to upload them to Dropbox and it's taking forever because it's RAWs. And I was like, oh, this is just taking too long. So you know what? I'm going to stop this process and I'm going to just put them onto a disk. So I put a disk, a thumb drive in. So now I've got the thumb drive window up and I've got the window that's got the access to the card up. And then I've got like Dropbox up and I'm working with that. And oops.
This is going to be bad.
Oops.
This is going to be bad.
Oops. I inadvertently deleted half of the RAWs off of the card.
That's a huge mistake.
That had not been backed up.
Oh, boy.
And so, hello, instant panic. But then,
it's not an insurmountable issue, but it is a scary one.
I just go to my camera and I pull out the CF card or the SD card. I'm sorry, I pull out the SD card, which has the full size JPEG backups on it, and grab those. No problem. And in this case, I was lucky because there was nothing really had to be corrected. The white balance was clean and everything. I could have used the JPEGs anyway.
It was event photography, right?
It was event photography. I could have used the JPEGs anyway. Again, two card slots, dude. Two card
saves
slots. So when you're an idiot and you make a stupid mistake, your butt is saved. And I got to tell you, I have because of my little Fuji, and I like to shoot in JPEG with that all the time because I don't want to have to do RAW stuff afterwards. I've really started to kind of toy around with the idea of maybe shooting some JPEGs on occasion instead of RAWs just to save myself the time. I mean, people say that and you always go, what? No.
Well, when we shoot corporate event photography, we shoot JPEGs.
Yeah.
There's just no, need for the latitude in the file. There's no, they're not going to get fully retouched. If you can get your exposures right, and even then, even if you underexpose or overexpose,
you can still make
JPEG
a little
has enough latitude.
Yeah, you can make. What would you say? How much more latitude do you get working with a raw file than you do working with a JPEG? I mean, it's the. If you're brightening a JPEG, it's never going to look as good as if you are raising the exposure on a RAW.
Correct. Well, the difference
but if it's only
is
a little bit, if we're talking a third of a stop or more, I don't think it's really that noticeable.
I wouldn't even say a full stop. JPEGs are fine. Like, the, you know, RAW files can go two or three, depending, you know, depending
you're
on the camera.
You're going three stops with a RAW file. Man, what the hell
you
were
can.
You thinking?
It's doable, and I've done it. But, you know, here's the thing. When I'm shooting corporate event photography, for most of us who do this, I'm serious. I could probably shoot it without actually... Just you could just shoot it blindfolded because every room is the same level of stinking light. Once you work enough hotels and convention centers and wedding venues, and you know you're going to be okay. I'm going to go to f4. I'm going to be at ISO 3200 at 80th of a second and auto white balance. And like you know that you're going to do that. Like that's if you're shooting available light. So I don't know. I've never had a problem with it, and never in shooting JPEGs for corporate events had an image or had a problem that we couldn't fix. That was like, oh man, if only I'd have shot that in RAW. And in that case, it makes it, you know, a lot faster to deliver those images to a client.
Well, the thing that started me thinking along those lines was in shooting with my Fuji, every once in a while I would take it with me to a wedding, and I would just do a few things at the wedding for fun, and I would have it shoot RAW and JPEG. And then I would get home, separate the RAWs and the JPEGs, look at the JPEGs, look at the RAWs, and then just delete the RAWs. and I was like, okay, well, what does that say? You know, that I don't even feel the need to go in and fix these.
It really depends on what you're, again, and you know, and I would say probably I wouldn't shoot JPEGs for a wedding only because that's somebody's wedding. You know, with corporate event photography, the clients, they'll use some of the images on their social media and they'll use like, you know, maybe they'll put some in a slideshow at the next morning's presentation, but pretty sure that they're never going to look at them again once the event passes for the most part. So, I don't feel the need to have that, but whatever. Or you could certainly, with two card slots, to your point, shoot both, and then if you make a mistake, go to the RAWs, and if you don't, then just use the JPEGs, and that'll be fine. That's, yeah, whatever, you know, I'm fine with it. Again, most of what I do, I don't need two card slots, so I don't really care.
So Photokina is just wrapped up, and we've talked a bit about cameras. It's been a really big month for cameras.
It's been a big couple of months because we had, you know, Nikon, Canon, Fuji came out with a bunch of new stuff.
One thing I didn't want to mention that we
Leica
have not,
made some announcements.
We haven't talked about that also made a big splash at Photokina was Panasonic announced their first full-frame mirrorless camera, which they're saying is going to come out next year.
Yeah, I think they said, yeah, we're working on it, which is, to me, it was like, hey, good for you. However, I was like, yeah, of course you are.
Well, it's called the Lumix X series, but one of the things that's interesting is that they have paired with the S-mount that Leica and Sigma use. So when they produce this camera, they don't have to worry about not having a strong lens lineup ready because Leica's lenses and Sigma's lenses will fit this camera.
And apparently, I mean, I know several people that use the Sigma lenses, like the 1.4, you know, 85 art lenses and who really like them. I haven't used them, but I know people who
Sigma's
really
come
them.
A long way. Sigma used to be the lens you used when you were first starting out because you couldn't afford Canon L-series glass.
We call them Bobo lenses.
Yeah. Tamron and Sigma. Those were because I started off using Tamrons and Sigmas until I could afford to buy L-series glass. But
and
I know a lot of
people
who now you'll review reviews and they'll say this lens is, but also the price has gone up on them. They're not as cheap as they used to be.
Well, that's what we used to call the when you had to get off-brand tennis shoes as a kid. You know, the other kids at school would make fun of you and say you had Bobo shoes.
Mikey's.
Mikey's.
But it's just interesting to see Panasonic come in with a Lumix full frame because now they're going after a market and that they haven't really they've always been more consumer friendly but full frame that's pro all the way because consumers
really
could care less
with,
consumers
with,
could care less about
yeah
full
but
frame.
Panasonic is really really big with video like the GH5 and GH5S I think I mean, I was just photographing a guy for his business who is a – he does commercial video, and he uses all the Panasonic GH5s and loves them, so swears by them. And they look like little toys. They're tiny little suckers, yeah, too. But the options and stuff that they give people to produce video are pretty impressive. And it's – and if you're shooting video, having a full-frame sensor really doesn't make that much of a difference for the most part, because it's already much bigger than the video resolution that you're getting anyway.
One of the things that – one of the things that – this has got me thinking about, though, is it's been a few weeks now since we talked about it, and I've been watching a lot of videos and watching a lot of reviews and that sort of stuff, and I wonder if we shouldn't revisit now, with a little, everything's calmed down, a kind of a new assessment of the new Canon and the new Nikon full-frame mirrorless cameras.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's funny because I have you been doing this too this week? I have really been on my second screen, just been on YouTube camera porn.
Yeah,
don't
get me started. I've been looking at the Fuji X-T3 reviews like crazy. I've been reading all the stuff on the Canon. And a lot of the stuff about the Canon that I keep seeing now is coming back and is refuting some of the points that I made against it. Now, it still doesn't have two card slots, and I need two card slots.
But there's refuting the fact that it does not have two card slots.
But then there's other things like the IBIS, for example. And Canon had a great comeback to that. Why doesn't the camera have in-body image stabilization? And Canon said, because if you stabilize the body for the lenses, you will never get as good a stabilization as if you stabilize every lens specifically for itself. So instead of stabilizing the body, we stabilize each individual lens. And Canon is primarily a lens company and are better at that than anyone. And so that's a perfectly valid excuse as to why they don't have IBIS in the body.
It's easy to say, first of all, in a lot of stuff I've been watching in the last week, somebody said, and I think I was listening to the Petapixel podcast with Sharky James, which, by the way, if you don't listen to that podcast and you want some, it's a little more, I know we've been fairly gear heavy over the last month or so because of all the new gear coming out, but we're not normally very gear or tech heavy on the show. But Sharky James
or podcast, information heavy, really.
Yeah, or content, or
knowledge,
or anything good, actually.
Expertise.
Except for talking about Star Wars and nonsense.
Yeah, there are many things we don't have on the podcast. That's a much longer list.
Yeah, check out the Petapixel podcast with Sharky James, and he is in a very listenable, not super dry way, does very in-depth and entertaining technical breakdowns of any new equipment coming out, and he's got a really great perspective. And one thing, he was talking about the different cameras coming out from Photokina or whatever, and he said something that I was just like, huh. He goes, you really can't pick a bad camera these days. And I was like,
no.
You know, that's true. You could go in, and if you're going to spend anywhere from $1,500 to $3,500 on a camera, do a little bit of homework, check your Amazon reviews and your Adorama reviews. But you're not going to buy a bad camera. It's impossible to buy a bad camera.
No, there's no duds. There's no duds. As much as we nitpick them apart, there's no, I've got to be so careful, because if I get the wrong camera, I'm not going to be able to do my job. No. No.
They're like the superhero movies of the technology world. No. If you think about it, I remember when I was a kid, if there happened to be a superhero movie that got made ever, the 1979 Spider-Man made for television film and stuff like that, they were generally abysmal, every single one. And until you got to the 90s, and the best we came up with was the first X-Men film that 20th Century Fox released, and we were just geeked out. And if you go back and you watch that now, you go, wow, this is real bad, because the superhero, everything is so good now that we're just nitpicking.
We really are. I mean, and that's a great example, because the Justice League movie was awful, and I watch it and I'm like, this would have been the best movie ever made 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, if that had come out in 1999
or
2005.
Years ago, the standard is so high now.
Exactly my point is that you can't buy a bad camera. Some companies are innovating more. One will get the leg up over the other. I don't think it matters what format you're with, what brand you choose. They're all eventually going to have the same stuff if you wait 18 months. So the jumping between brands is almost... The more I think about it, and I have thought about it, because I look at everything that comes out. You know, I have a photography podcast and a photography business. But the more I realize, it's just that it's not going to make that much of a difference in the long term. So before we talk about camera specifically, I just want to say that I truly believe you can't hardly buy a bad camera.
No,
like, if you buy something new, you can't.
I just made a video. I'm going to post it tomorrow on YouTube about my whole process of trying to go from DSLR to mirrorless. Am I going to go from DSLR to mirrorless? When am I going to go from DSLR to mirrorless? Because I've been focusing on it so much lately, I decided it would help me to clarify it if I just made a video. And in the video, I specifically do not pick apart every little thing about every little camera because they're all pretty good, you know? So really it's more of a bigger decision of, are you going to move to mirrorless? Because picking the camera is really not the big decision. The big decision is, are you going to move to mirrorless?
Everybody's going to move to mirrorless.
And
no,
everyone's going to move to mirrorless eventually.
No question.
So then it just becomes a question of when.
There's no question. You're going to have to.
I think the big questions are you going to move and when? And then the second question is, how important is full frame?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the debate. One of the things that I was thinking about, I went back and I've been watching a lot about the new Fuji cameras and the Nikon Z series. And if you watch any reviewers from the UK, it's the Nikon Z series, whatever.
Why do they say Z? Is that just a...
For the letter Z, that's seriously, if you
they
recite
Z.
The alphabet, the letter Z is Z. Don't know why. I think
All right.
It's weird. But anyway, they also say H for H, incidentally. Fuji, was it XH1? But anywho, I was watching this YouTube channel. It's called DSLR Filmmaker. And the guy had a video, and it was called about the EOS R specifically. And he's like, you're wrong about the EOS R. And basically, all it comes down to is this. He said, if this camera came out and it wasn't full frame, if it was an APS-C sensor camera, he said, everybody would be talking about how this is the greatest camera on the market.
Okay.
Like, he said, it's because it's a full frame that they're like, it has deigned to step into the territory of, quote-unquote, the pro photographers. Whereas I know many pros now shooting with APS-C sensor cameras, like the Fuji X-T2s and X-T3s and stuff. But it said, with the features that it has and all the new stuff that it brings to the table, if it had come out and it was just an APS-C sensor camera that they were like, hey, this is our new line of APS-C mirrorless, it would be like, it's the best camera, and it's the best one.
Well, you have an APS-C Canon camera. Which one
I do have the M5, and in that M series, a lot of the technology in the new R series was pulled from their experimentations with the M, like using the LCD screen to pick your focus.
So how does the new camera compare to the M5? I mean, if you were going to look to buy the M5 today, would you be like, oh my God, this camera is so much better than the M5?
Well, the M5 is almost obsolete now compared to the M50 came out, which has all the same stuff, except it's got 4K video and it's $200 less. So
right.
I'm not really sure how that works out. But to buy like an M5 with the lens that I have would probably be around $1,000, $1,100. So, I mean, they're just kind of a different
thing.
Well,
my point is the guy right that if this had an APS-C sensor in it, you would just be going, wow, this is so much better than the M5 or the M5.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it would probably have to cost less than $2,300. But just theoretically, if they came out with, they said, we're doing a new line of mirrorless APS-C sensor cameras. If the M line had morphed into it and they said, we're going to stop producing the M series and now the R series is this APS-C sensor instead of the full frame, it would be like, wow, Canon has got their mirrorless game together. We'd be like, wow, they've really updated. They cut their teeth on the M series, and now they have upped their damn game. They are rocking it. But because
right.
it's a full frame sensor, it seems like somehow everybody's offended by it. And so
it's got to have the world. If it's a full frame sensor, it's got to be the Canon 5D Mark V, but mirrorless.
Which is crazy because the 6D and the 6D Mark II are two of the like most popular things they've come out with recently, which are both full frame cameras that are not full featured in that same way.
Is a 6D full frame?
Yes, it is.
I didn't know.
And so, yeah, and so it's basically, you know, I don't know. So my point being, when we talk about the Nikons and the Fujis and the Canons and anybody else, it's like we are so brutal on features when it's like more stuff's coming, everybody, chill out, and everything will be fine. I think that the Nikons look really cool. The in-body image stabilization is neat, and they've got some really neat features, like the full-frame 4K video is really cool for people who do video. So there's kind of a lot to like about a lot of these, but I'm with Canon as the brand that I've used, and I don't see any sense in changing. And I've actually been, because the stuff that I've been watching and thinking about kind of what I need in my business, I'm really seriously considering getting the EOS R sometime in the next, you know, 4 to 6 months, because I'm getting to the point now where I usually replace or get a newer camera body about every 3 to 4 years, maybe 5 on the outside. And so I've had the 5D and the 2 and the 3 and the 4. And it would be a fine addition because it was funny. I don't know if you follow. I watched a video that the headshot photographer that everybody knows, Peter Hurley, was doing an Instagram live thing. And he was just doing the EOS R as a photo shoot to kind of show himself using it. And he didn't have to use the viewfinder or the screen because the camera focuses right on the eyeball. You can set it to focus on the eye every single shot. So for me, in a situation where I've got like 300 people to shoot, like I did and talked about 2 weeks ago, to focus on the eyeball in a headshot is very, very important. But that takes 2-3 seconds per time that you shoot to find the eyeball and refocus on it. And if I didn't have to do that, over the course of 300 people or 3,000 people, which is about how many I shoot every year, that saves me a lot of time. And not only that, but since I shoot on a tripod, if I've got this shot framed up and I don't have to focus in any specific place, the camera will find the eyeball and focus on it for me. I don't ever have to put my face behind the camera, so I can talk to my subject uninterrupted the entire time. And that would be incredibly useful to me.
It's a major annoyance taken off the plate for you. The whole, I've got to break from my subject now to pay attention to my camera and get my focus, and I've got to keep glancing back at that, and now that's completely gone.
Yes, absolutely. So that's and that technology is really sort of like, man, okay, I could get with
that. You know? I love that with my Fuji. I will stand there with it, not at my face, but down low, and just be looking at people and talking to people and glancing down, and I can see that it's grabbing their face and focusing automatically, and I'm able to engage with them and get pictures when they don't know I'm taking pictures, and get, you know, it's a wonderful. The whole camera doing all that work for you is pretty cool.
Yeah. So I'm for it. Like, okay. No, I'm like, I've had time to process. And like I was thinking about this today, I've been processing the Last Jedi, the most recent in the Star Wars movies. You know,
right.
And I've been processing it for a while because I saw the movie. And if you follow this, you know it's very controversial. But I was just been processing the information, going, I think in the long term, this is going to go down as like a really good. Really good movie.
It is a really good movie.
I wore my Star Wars T-shirt today, and I'm feeling like I'm healing from divisive politics. Like the most divisive thing that happened in politics this year was The Last Jedi.
I was down on the first one, the first new one.
Yeah, you did not like Force Awakens at all.
No, I felt like there were too many jumps to try and make it all fit together. And okay, I was down on that one. But if you look at the last one. It's really this decade's Empire Strikes Back. You know, it just hits the ground running, and it's just act after act after act of action and fun and drama and boom, 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 advancing the story. And I think you're right. I think that the last one will go down as a good story. And listen, the people who were ticked off about the way Luke was treated, get over it. You know, life goes on. That's what we do. I mean, especially since Star Wars is basically a comic book movie. And if you read comic books, you know that, every other month they decide they're going to kill Superman or something. I mean, that's what they do. They write crazy stories. What if Spider-Man was a girl? They just write crazy stories and stuff. But what if? That's the whole idea. And that's
and
what
it's also
here.
Largely made for 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
I just want to point that out. So if you're 48 and you love Star Wars when you were 10... and they're really not resonating with you as 48 years old. Yeah, I guess that's probably okay.
One of the other things, by the way, that I mentioned in my video before we leave this topic, one of the other things I mentioned in my video that has nothing to do with the actual gear as far as making the switch. And because you talked about, you said I'm a Canon guy, and I'm a Canon guy. I've been a Canon shooter my whole professional career. You really can't underestimate the value of Canon professional services either.
I tell you, if everything else.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be equal. Canon could be a little bit behind on someone else's camera, but Canon professional services, the fact that I know I can take my camera, stick it in a box, and put it and take it down and drop it off at FedEx, and a week from now it comes back fixed, that's huge.
With no question. Like,
yeah, that's
absolutely
huge when you're a pro shooter because you can't afford to be without your equipment for very long. And every time I send it to them, it comes back, man, like brand new.
Yeah, just the service and support in general to me is, as a professional photographer in my business, using something, whatever brand you use, if I had to start today, one of my main considerations would be service and support for my equipment. And we've talked about this in supplemental equipment, like whether you're buying lights or flashes or strobes or whatever. If I can't get that serviced adequately and quickly and have those needs met, that is, I don't care if it's better and less expensive, that's not equipment that I'm interested in buying, because I'm going to drop something or break something, or something's sure. going to need to be repaired. And that's going to be an incredibly frustrating thing, because, you know, if you're in a position where you can't get adequate service on a piece of equipment, then you're going to have to go buy something because you're going to have a job coming up, and that's just going to eat up your profit. So service and support can save you time and money. And just, that's a consideration starting from zero with no gear that I would have to make, knowing what I know now for sure.
I had another thing that I had never really thought about with shooting with a mirrorless camera versus shooting with the ones we use now, the DSLRs. And it was Jim up in New York who brought this to my attention. He said, I don't think you'll like shooting mirrorless with a flash. And I had never thought about this, because you can't instantly review your picture on the back of the camera, because your camera back LCD is the same as your EVF, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have your camera set up like I have my DSLR set up, where every time I take a picture, that picture instantly appears on the back of my LCD for like 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you take a picture, pop, and then you quickly glance at the back to make sure the exposure is clean and right or whatever, and then you go and you shoot some more, okay? Mm-hmm. If you have your camera set up that way with a mirrorless camera, when you take the picture, that picture will appear in your viewfinder.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people might like that if you're doing, say, portraits. But if you're working a wedding and it's fast and loose, you don't want your view... You may be going pop, 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 pop. You don't want it stopping to show you every picture in the viewfinder.
Right.
So you've got to turn that off. And to turn that off, it also turns it off on the back screen. So now, anytime you want to chimp, you've got to hit the button to bring up your image review.
Which is what I do with my Fuji.
I do it with my Fuji because I didn't like that either, where I would take a picture and then it would show on the screen. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. You just have to get used to, now when you take a picture, it's not going to appear anymore on the back of the screen automatically. You're going to have to push a button if you want to chimp it.
One of the other things I didn't love, and I've shot with my M5 versus shooting with my 5D4 with the optical viewfinder, is I shoot in the studio. I don't use my modeling lights. I keep the full lights on in the studio.
Right.
Because, it's just like, I just feel like it's weird. A lot of times I'm alone, me and a subject, and a lot of times it's, people who are young or of the opposite sex or whatever. And I'm not going to be in like a dimly lit, moody room. I like it to be bright.
But a little berry-like.
I like it to be bright and fully lit. And so, when you're looking through the viewfinder, if your camera settings are for strobes, you're going to look through the viewfinder on an EVF and it's going to look dark. It's going to look like what it actually, it's going to give you a preview of the image underexposed.
Well, one of the things that I like about, which one is it? The X Pro from Fuji is it's got the hybrid viewfinder. The same thing as my little Fuji has, where it has a hybrid viewfinder, so you can actually look through glass and not be looking at the EVF at all, which in a low light situation is great because you don't have that EVF showing you a dark room.
Yeah, well, anyway, so I think we're definitely all going to go
so
there,
many options.
But what are you going to do?
So many options.
You cannot buy a bad camera, almost.
You really can't.
You probably can't. I say probably. I haven't tried them all, but you probably can't buy a bad one. So
I don't think you can. And what's really exciting to me is that there are so many manufacturers now that are putting out cameras that are worth looking at.
Yeah, it's become there are more horses in the race now. Things have changed quite a bit. I'm interested to see. And only that competition is only good for photographers. We receive all the benefit of that. Even if you don't switch brands to another one, if another brand like Sony comes along with some innovative ideas, the other brands are going to have to keep up or lose their customers. So we all are the beneficiaries of great ideas coming in from multiple sources. So I'm excited about what's coming up, and I think I might make I'll keep you posted. I think I might seriously be considering the EOS R as adding that to my kit. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, I held one this summer. So I've had one in my hand, and the most noticeable thing is how big the lens is. And by big, I mean wide.
Well, yeah, the diameter.
It has considerable girth.
Yeah, a lot of girth. Although some photographers say that it's more important than others, the wide barrel, the girth of the lens, it really depends.
I think the girth is more important than the length of the lens.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what they say. I don't know. Some people like longer lenses. Some people like wider lenses. It really just depends. For me, it's all about what fits in the case the best. How it fits in the case.
Really? The case?
Yeah.
You had to go just a little too far.
I don't know if we've met.
You could have just left it. You were there. You were good. But then, because that makes no sense. Of course you don't care about the case. You have to keep it real.
Just let me do my thing, man.
You know,
just,
for that double entendre to really stick, it has to every step of the way sound like a real thing that you're talking about.
You just let me do my thing.
Okay, sorry.
Crashing and burning is what I do.
How it fits in the case is important to Gary.
Ruining jokes is kind of my thing. Especially subtlety. Jokes.
Subtlety is not your strong suit.
No. Come on, man. How many episodes? 180 almost or something. Like,
right.
We've done this a lot. You should know me by now.
How it fits in the case. You just couldn't let it go. You're like, I can get one more in. I know I can get one more joke in here.
Have you met Gary?
We should probably wrap this up now. It's about that time.
Yeah. Let's see. What we got going on? What do we got going on? You are speaking at Imaging USA.
I am.
That is fast approaching in January.
It's not that fast, but we're at that time of year now where you're like, oh my gosh, it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. Right. I mean, it's like boom, boom, boom. It seems like it's long. When you were a kid, it seemed like forever,
right?
Between those three holidays. But then when you get to be a grown-up, it seems like it's just next week. Everything's
well,
next week.
Well, the all the chatter now, because a lot of the conventions are starting to really release and push their speaker lineups. And so there's a lot of chatter in different Facebook groups for different conventions. And so I've just been picking up a lot of that, and people are starting to get excited about convention season, which really starts January and goes through about April. And I think that's when you get a lot of the big conventions, Imaging USA, WPPI, and then, I think Sync is in there somewhere, and Shutterfest is in there somewhere. And then you've got the SWPP in London, and that's in January. So we've got a bunch of conventions coming up. So if you want to see, we're going to update on photobombpodcast.com where both of us will be speaking, but I want to really push imagingusa.org because we will both be there. I will not be speaking, but I will be hopefully up in time to go and introduce my good friend Boo Ray Perry in his platform class.
Yeah, it's an 8 a.m. class, so we're going to wait and see if you make that. But you get up early now, so.
I do. Well, I have toddlers, so even if I don't set an alarm, I don't even have to set an alarm. Even if I want to sleep. Like today, it was Sunday. I didn't have to get up for anything. I was still up at 6.
Ooh, you know? 6?
Yeah.
I slept in, and I was up at 8.
Yeah, I usually got about 5:30 or 6 most mornings.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, if you've got toddlers and we've just been working a lot. And so, I've just been going to bed at like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And so, sleep until 5:30, that's like a good 7 plus hours of sleep. That's, that's plenty. You don't need more than that.
Right. Oh, hey, I had something happen. I do want to add this real quick. I had something happen that was cool. The first test of my complete self-contained headshot kit. I put together a kit, a big rolling case that has everything in it I need to do a headshot.
And that, right, with the cool folding stool that you have.
It's got a folding stool. It's got backdrops. It's got white and gray. It's got light stands for main light, kicker light, reflector, backdrop, X-drop system, tripod for the camera. Everything in a self-contained case.
You got a headshot go bag.
Right,
so
go
you
bag.
Don't have to
and
pack
keep,
a bag.
And I keep it in my truck. It's in there all the time because there's no electronics or anything, and there's nothing in there that the heat will destroy.
In case the commissioner puts up the boo
exactly.
signal.
Exactly. In case the boo signal comes up. But mostly because it's kind of heavy and it's a pain to move, and there's no reason. I have no place to put it inside, but my truck's got tons of it. So I just keep it in there all the time. I also keep my posing stools in there all the time just because they're big and I don't have anything else in the back of the truck. And I got the first test of that where it was, I guess, last week. I got a call on Wednesday from a small special needs school, and they only had 50 students, and their photographer backed out on them last minute, and they needed me to come in the next day. And I said, sure. And it was great when I got off the phone with them that I didn't have to then scramble and go, okay, I got to put my stuff together. I got to get everything ready because I got to go first thing in the morning. And I was like, no, it's all right there. I just need to make sure my batteries are charged. And I just grabbed my kit and put it in my car the same as I would as if I was going to shoot a beach wedding, except when I got there, I took the kit out and I took that bag out and the bag had everything I needed in it and I set it all up and I did the 50 shots and I came home and it was great. Because I questioned whether or not it was worth going to the trouble of building this kit and buying the bag, But it was, just because I didn't have to do that mad scramble panic of, I've got to put together everything I need for this particular type of job now in the last minute.
Yeah,
it's always
that,
there.
Having enough gear to have a go bag, I got to tell you,
it's nice.
Awesome.
And you can get gear so cheap now. A lot of the stuff you can get is so cheap. You know, it's stands and reflectors and things like that. Companies like Godox and Neuer, you know, that make the cheaper stuff that if you're not using it all the time, you know, if it's an occasional use thing.
Well, if you've got studio stuff set up, it's just to take down everything,
yeah.
Pack it up. It adds 2 or 3 hours worth of work to every job.
Right.
You know, which if you amortize that over a couple of months, it's just cheaper and easier just to buy portable gear, buy a good, solid, rolling bag, and just stuff it full of crap.
It's great. And because it's always there, if I'm off doing any other job, if I'm doing a bar mitzvah or whatever, I know that in my truck, I've got 2 or 3 tripods, I've got a reflector, I've got a background, so if anything was to come my way, I got a stool. If anything comes my way last minute, I could just grab that bag and roll it in, and it's got everything I could possibly need to do any kind of job in it.
Yeah, and I've been on jobs before where I'm shooting events or shooting headshots, one or the other, and I've sold the other one while on the job. They're like, you know, we booked one of our biggest jobs, our biggest single customer. I was doing some stills for them for to advertise the conference for like slideshows, and they're like, you know, we were thinking about maybe having headshots at one of these conferences, and I think my assistant Kevin at the time was with me, and he's like, you know, Gary does that. We could do that. We could do that, right? Like, when do you need it? Tomorrow? Yeah, no problem. So we showed up and shot 500 headshots, and we had the go bag, the gear ready to go.
Right, it's nice.
And so, yeah, absolutely. Get a go bag. Oh, by the way, I want to plug something here. I'm doing a presentation for a brand new PPA affiliate group. This is a brand new group that just started, the Treasure Coast Professional Photographers Association. So that's the east coast of Florida, down by Martin St. Lucie County. And so this is the area of the country where I'm from. I grew up there. And so I agreed to come down and do a program for them as a personal favor to my good friend Carolyn Lightcap, who helped start that group. And so October 25th on Thursday, if you're listening to this before then, at 6 o'clock, I will be doing a program on headshots for the TCPPA. And so if you look that up on Facebook, the Treasure Coast Professional Photographers Association, come and see me there. And
all
that's
right.
Probably about the only place like that you're going to get to see me. So it's going to be a nice, small, group, probably 50 or so people. And it'll be a really cool, relaxed, class. And so I don't really, have time to do a lot of little gigs, but these are great people who I really care about. So I'm going to go do this for them. And you should be there. Check that out. And I'll post a link to that on the Facebook page. So if you happen to be in that area, check that out. Otherwise, Bure will be at Imaging USA in January. If you have not booked your hotel room and registered, do that. And if you join PPA as a new member, I believe you get to go to Imaging USA. You get free registration your first year as a PPA member. So
that's a good deal, because that's like $250 or something.
I mean, right then and there, that pays for your PPA membership for the year, just being able to go to Imaging USA, and I believe they still do that. So if you sign up as a new member, you get to go. And then you can come see Bure and me and hang out and watch Bure's most excellent presentation. And also, we're going to have a full list of all of both of our speaking gigs coming up over the next few months, all on photobombpodcast.com.
All right. Don't forget, you can find us online at hughesfioretti.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me at bureperry.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/photobombpodcast. And you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
It's a shell of a good time. See you later. It's called a callback. I don't know if you know about comedy.